From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we present another episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank's guest is Dr. Gary Habermas, Distinguished Professor and Chair of the Department of Philosophy and Theology at Liberty University, and a world-renowned expert on the historical, philosophical, and theological issues surrounding the death and resurrection of Jesus. Now, let's join Hank Hanegraaff and Gary Habermas in their conversation.
God does miracles. Miracles are real. And we can always go back to the resurrection as the basis for believing that miracles really do happen.
Yeah, for sure. When I was in grad school, it was a real minority view that Jesus was a miracle worker. And today, the figure's 90-something, that Jesus did something just like these things, if not the actual ones in the Gospels. I mean, these are critics. When the critics say, somebody could say, well, Habermas, why do you keep saying, if it's not those, it's ones like them? I'm talking about that's the view of critics that are far down the left-hand side of the spectrum as you can go. And the worst they will say is, well, if it wasn't the feeding of the 5,000 was a similar thing, maybe there were only 500 people there, but he multiplied food for, I'm just making something up. But what I mean is, they'll say it's either those stories in the Gospels or ones just like them. So they believe Jesus did these things? Well, something like that, yeah. And what's the figure at? About 100%. And what was it when you were in grad school? It was about 20%. The times have changed. And you know, today, Hank, more, if you do a head count, more people think that something legitimately happened to Jesus after his death than those who think nothing happened and his body turned into dust. More people think something happened to Jesus.
This ought to get everybody pretty excited listening in. I mean, when you think about this, this has got to get people excited. I mean, we have all the evidence. Christianity is absolutely unique, unlike other religions. It's rooted in history and evidence. We have the only leader, Jesus Christ, who claimed that he was God. And Christianity is also unique in that it cogently accounts for the vast array of phenomena that we encounter in everyday life. I mean, you talk about the human mind or the laws of science or the laws of logic or ethical norms or justice or love. You can go on and on. Christianity corresponds to reality.
What we call intelligent design.
Yeah.
All the order in the universe, the laws, and math. Why does math work? Why does 2 + 2 always equal 4 in a world that, you know, came from chaos, supposedly? Shouldn't it, I mean, could it be that 2 + 2 is 4 today and 2 + 2 is 10 tomorrow? You know, the world, the other view is chaotic. Anything can happen. Why does it always happen in an orderly manner? Now, somebody might say, well, yeah, there's a lot of religions that can account for that. Okay, fine. There is. I mean, I'm sure you could be a happy Buddhist or Hindu and celebrate intelligent design. I have a book in my file where a Hindu with a PhD in physics argues for the cosmological argument for God's existence. That's wonderful. That evidence is there for everybody. It's like the sun shining on the just and the unjust. But what happens with all these specific ones, like Jesus was a miracle worker? You know, Jesus not only rose from the dead, he predicted it ahead of time. Critics are now saying, yeah, the evidence is that he predicted it. But now, whoa, don't miss the forest for the trees. If he predicted it ahead of time, that means it's not just a happenstance kind of thing. It means he knew it was there, so it's part of a plan. He was the planner for the plan. So Jesus had a place in the Christian worldview prior to his death and resurrection. I mean, that he predicted it shows that he was a party to the plan. And that just opens up a whole other vista about who Jesus is. So there's no end to these sorts of things. They're just great evidence. Now, when you ask another religion to step up to the plate, I've done this before. I've been on talks with three or four of the religions at state universities, and I don't hear them talking evidence. I don't hear that comment from them. They'll talk more about doing the right thing. That's good. I mean, it really is. That's good. But what are they going to do with about evidence when they really don't have any? And then they get upset with us because we try to say we have evidence, and they don't like us saying that.
So talk for just a moment to the thousands of people who are listening to you, and you're saying Christianity is rooted in history and evidence. You're talking about all of the exciting aspects of the historic Christian faith, and you've elucidated that about as clearly as anybody ever has or could, but that has to have some kind of an impact on people. So people are listening in to you. What should that mean for how they live their life today, how they live for the sum of treasure in heaven, how they circulate in their communities, in their churches, in their schools, not just keeping this treasure to themselves, but actually being able to communicate this joy and this treasure that we have to other people?
Now you're talking about Christians doing that?
Yeah, I'm talking about the fact that we have this incredible treasure. You've elucidated this. I mean, you've given us a whole lot of passion and zeal about how great our faith is. But if that's true, why are we losing the culture wars? We ought to be able to turn the world upside down in our generation like the Christians did in the first generation.
We should. Yeah, just a couple thoughts. I live on a little lake here in Virginia, and I'm looking out my double glass window here, and I'm looking out on the lake while you're talking. And a few years ago, I had a friend in the boat with me, and I caught a large bass. And I got this bass up in the boat, and I looked around the lake, and nobody was out of their house. Nobody was down by the lake. I didn't care. I held the bass up over my head, and I went, woo, really loud. Then we paddled the boat. We had a small motor, but we paddled the boat across the lake, and by that time, one of my neighbors had come out in the dock, and I pulled the bass out of the water because I had him on a chain, and I said to my neighbor, look at this guy I just caught, and the guy nicely told me, yeah, I could really care less. I don't fish, but my point is, I held the bass over my head, and I showed my neighbor, and my point was, y'all should be happy because of this big bass I caught. Okay, now my son's getting married tomorrow. What am I going to be doing? I'm going to be telling everybody, this is my last child who hasn't gotten married. I prayed that the Lord would allow me to see every one of my children marry a Christian, and it looks like it's happening tomorrow. You think I'm going to tell people? I'm going to tell people all over the place. I'm going to show them pictures of the wedding. If my team wins the Super Bowl, I'm going to tell you whether you're a football fan or not. Okay, now all these examples, bass, marriage, football team. Why aren't we the same way with our faith? If we're on the yellow brick road and the goal is the Emerald City, if we're on that path and we see somebody get off and we just let them go off into the woods where there's lions and tigers and bears, oh my, we just let them wander, and we don't really tell them to come back because we don't want to be bossy. Why am I more exultant about the bass and the wedding and the Super Bowl than I'm about telling people, do you know you can be sure of eternal life? And then I think of number one, I do a better job with football, fish, and marriages than I do with Jesus. And then secondly, Hank, we've had several great examples here today. Your Philippians 3, Paul said that I may attain the resurrection, and we both talked about 1 Thessalonians 4, and we grieve, but not as those without hope. And Peter, yep, y'all are going through persecution, but don't worry about it. You have heaven, and it's lined up for us. You started out the program talking about Paul saying that if Christ hasn't been raised from the dead, not only is your faith vain, but let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die.
Yep.
As far as Paul's concerned, it seems like the truth of the resurrection, there's no resurrection, you know, live it up. It's party time. It's one of the 60s themes. You know, if Jesus has been raised from the dead, by the way, let us eat, drink, and be merry sounds like a 60s theme. That's quoted from the Old Testament. Paul quotes it. But Paul says that's what our life is without the resurrection. That's the difference. If Christ has been raised, then eat, drink, and be merry. That's it. That's the difference. Go get drunk. Have a good time. Oh, he says, but Jesus is raised from the dead. So the last verse in 1 Corinthians 15 is, what are you going to do about it? And the first thing he says is, be steadfast, for our faith is not in vain. Mm-hmm. Secondly, he says, let's do something about it. And I teasingly say to people, do you know how Paul, how do you know Paul's a Baptist? And everyone laughs. I only say it if I'm at a Baptist church. But how do you know Paul's a Baptist?
It's the only place it works. Next,
pardon?
It's the only place it'll work.
Well, the next verse, you know, there's no verses in the originals there. 1 Corinthians 15:58, our labor in the Lord's not in vain. Very next verse is 16:1, and he takes up an offering for hurting saints.
Yeah.
So, number one, if the resurrections happen, what should you do? You should be steadfast in the faith. Number two, your labor is not in vain. So get your wallets out. We're going to help people who are hurting. And three is a theme we've been hitting hard here. He says, death, where's your sting? Yeah. Grave, where's your victory? So three things that follow from this in Paul. Be steadfast. Get your wallets out. What are you doing with your funds? And death, where's your sting? Well, one thing, Hank, about this has happened today to me. So when that first one about be steadfast, you know, I've been saying for years, and maybe you've cited it too, the stats say that we're losing our young people to the tune of 60 to 90% when they go away to college, they leave the faith. A report came out today. Well, I don't know when the report came out, but the article that I saw, I just got today, and the backup is two sociologists, one of whom is from Indiana University and one is from Harvard, and they say the new research says not that any indiscriminate young people are falling away, but that people who were not strong believers in their religion are the ones that are falling away, what they call the moderates, and the guy who wrote the article said, in parentheses, liberals. Mm. So it's the old mainline churches that are losing people at 60 to 90% when they go away to college. The article from the two sociologists from Indiana and Harvard says that people who are committed strongly to their faith, and it specifically says evangelicals in the article, it says they are not only not falling away, a small percentage of them do when they go away to college, but the figure was real small. Not only are they not losing their faith, evangelicals are growing. So when the first thing Paul says is be confident, be steadfast in your faith, and we go, yeah, but look at all the young people running away. The article says there are young people you didn't have in the first place. The ones that are strong in the faith, what we would use the word orthodox, those who believe the orthodox theology, they're the ones who are remaining, and they're stronger today. It's amazing. So to me, all those things the New Testament says are true because of the resurrection. It changes. The fingers of the resurrection reach into every single area of our life. You think about all the areas we've talked about. Be steadfast. Take your wallets out. Death, where's your sting? Grave, where's your victory? Don't grieve when your loved ones die. Don't grieve as somebody who's got no hope. You know, on and on. Don't party it. You don't live for parties. You live for... And then your testimony, Hank, I'm still thinking about it. Your testimony about having cancer and not despairing at all. It's just amazing. I mean that sincerely.
Oh, it's been the greatest year of my life, honestly. I mean, I'm still in the midst of it, but it's the greatest year of my life. It truly has been the greatest year of my life.
The greatest year of your life was your first year with cancer?
Yeah, and truly because it has taught me to order my life around the divine. Because once you're in a situation where you're staring your own mortality in the face, then it's no longer a matter of, well, I can prove this. I'm living it. I'm experiencing it. I'm experiencing the reality of Christ every single day.
All right, I'll tell you what. I'll turn into the questioner. And
sure.
And let me ask you a couple questions.
Sure.
Okay, here's my first question. Does that mean, I'm turning now in my New Testament to Hebrews 5, verse 8, speaking about Jesus, although he was a son, he he learned obedience from what he suffered. And Hebrews 2 says he was completed by his suffering. Are you saying that this last year, it took the ultimate suffering, the C word, it took the ultimate suffering, or what the world calls the worst suffering? You're a minister. You've been a minister for your whole life. You've been the Bible answer man. But yet, the last year of your life is the most invigorating and the most exciting, because as with Jesus, so with you, by your suffering, you learned obedience and growth. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying that, but I'm even saying more than that, because, you know, I have been for most of my career focused on truth. Truth matters. And I certainly hold to that. I don't just tip my hat to truth. I believe very, very strongly in giving answers. I believe very strongly in apologetics, the defense of the faith. I believe very strongly in promoting historical and biblical literacy. I believe very strongly in countering the cause. Truth matters. But I've discovered that life matters more.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Gary Habermas. In his book, Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World, Abdul Murray challenges Christians to consider how we have played a part in fostering a culture of confusion through bad arguments, unwise labeling, and emotional attacks. Followers of Christ must learn to defend the truth with accuracy and precision, and with gentleness and respect. To receive your copy of Abdul Murray's book, Saving Truth, as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org. When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity. Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. Increasingly, Western culture embraces confusion as a virtue and decries certainty as a sin. Those who are confused about sexuality and identity are viewed as heroes. Those who are confused about morality are progressive pioneers. Conversely, those who express certainty about any of these issues are seen as bigoted and intolerant. In Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World, Abdul Murray responds to the confusion by offering gospel clarity that can touch the hearts and minds of those in our post-truth culture. To receive your copy of Saving Truth as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter.
And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you. On this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, we're bringing you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. There is no greater need in our post-truth culture of confusion than the clarification of truth, what truth is, how one can know truth, and most importantly, why we must submit our personal preferences to truth no matter the cost. Be sure to read Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World by Abdu Murray. To receive your copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Professor Gary Habermas, in their conversation.
Truth matters, but I've discovered that life matters more, that the map is not the territory, the menu is not the meal. You should never mistake the cradle for its occupants. So I've discovered that there's a reality to the Christian life that is not just snarling logicality, but it's an experiential relationship with Jesus Christ. And you meet Christ in the cauldron of adversity in a way that you don't meet him in any other place. It's sort of what Spurgeon said, "Were you ever in the melting pot, dear friends? I have been there with my sermons with me." And the result of melting is that you arrive at a true valuation of things, and then you are poured out in new and better fashion. And all I can say to that is amen, amen, and amen.
And cancer did this to you.
Yeah, and you see that the sea in Christ envelops, completely diminishes the sea in cancer. Christ is so much bigger than cancer.
Hank, you know what? Here's what I'm thinking while you're talking. I'm thinking, you need an interviewer, get Melanie in here or somebody, and interview Hank for his own program. On how he found out after, I assume we started the program by saying we're both the same age, and I guess you've been ministering then for 40-ish years, but it took the last year for you to really wake up to this, and the Lord used the worst word, the scariest word in the English language, to cause you to see this. So suffering, as bad as it is, does bring us to some of the greatest truths in our lives.
Yeah, it does. And you know what's interesting about this, Gary, for me, is that this last year of my life has been so different because I've gone through most of my life sort of in a blessed way. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, I've been blessed in my marriage, I've been blessed having 12 children. I've been blessed in so many different ways. And so you can look at the fact that you have it's easy for you to say, it's easy for me to say, when you're not sick, when you can see the suffering of other people and you can feel their pain in some sense, but you can't really know that this is real in the truest sense of the world until you're in the cauldron of adversity yourself. Now you see this Christian faith really does correspond to reality. In a sense, while I was well and everything was, I still believed the Christian faith. I was committed to Christ. But now I have seen, in a sense that I never saw before, that this gives you the peace that passes all understanding.
Wow. What a testimony. I mean, that seriously. What was that sentence you used again? That this last year of your life has been the what year? The best what?
Well, it's been the best year of my life, and the reason is because it's allowed me to order my life around the divine. You know, because when you are walking through this earth, you could talk about how easy it is to, you know, look away from all of the things that the earth can give you. Well, when you've been really blessed in this life in so many different ways, you can become very attached to the things of this world. But the moment you face your own mortality, all of a sudden those things grow strangely dim. And then the eternal things take precedent. You know, the things that you're talking about, the Emerald City. They start to take precedent.
People need to hear your testimony, because it's not because I conquered cancer, but let me tell you what I learned. It's I'm in the middle of cancer, and let me tell you what I learned.
Yeah. Yeah.
But here's my second question for you. Not knowing your wife, I've seen pictures, but what would she say? Not would she say you truly lived above it? That's not my question. My question is, since I was the spouse and watched my spouse, my wife, die of cancer, if your last year is a 10 out of a 10, and you've just really reached great heights, I suppose it's been a lot bigger struggle for her.
You know, it's interesting. We've gone through this together, and it has been one of the most fantastic things in terms of our marriage relationship.
Really?
As well, because she's going to the hospital with me, you know, the blood draws, all the stuff that goes along with cancer, you know about it because you live through it yourself, vicariously through your wife. But you go through all of that, and you know, what's cool about this, so this is a podcast that millions of people will listen to, but my kids will listen to this, my wife will listen to this, and they know firsthand the joy and peace that I've had this year and how this has brought our family together. We've had a tight-knit family and got 9 natural children, 3 adopted children, so I have 12 children. This has brought us into a spiritual dimension that exceeds anything that we've ever experienced, not only individually, but collectively as well. So yeah, it's been fantastic for my wife. Now, my wife has so much to do with so many kids and so much going on, but yet somehow or other, God makes it all work. You know, you think that it's impossible to add to your schedule in this kind of a context, but yet I have. I mean, this year I started a podcast. I started utilizing, you know, digital media platforms. I wrote a book called Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion with HarperCollins, and doing everything that you have to do to promote that. So there's been so much on our plate, but somehow it all works, and it works in a fantastic way, and I'm overjoyed. I mean, it's true. I could be dead tomorrow. I have stage 4 mantle cell lymphoma. It is an incurable disease, but you know, honestly, Gary, I think I'm going to experience a miracle. But if I don't, I'm just as happy. I honestly think I'm going to be healed of this disease. I believe that, but it could very well be that I'm wrong. I'm not God. I don't know the beginning from the end. But I am absolutely content in my circumstance.
Now, and your wife, you say, would she say she's grown this last year too?
Oh, it's been unbelievable. I mean, we have been growing together. This has been fantastic in our growth together. I mean, just our devotions together, our life together. And then, you know, the other thing, you mentioned something about persecution. You start looking at persecution and you start looking at it in a completely different way, because what did Christ say? He said, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you on account of me. Rejoice and be glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For the same way they so now you look at persecution and you're not, and you look at slander and you're not trying to cover it up or hide it. You're actually saying, this is wonderful.
It's gaining rewards for me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? You were quoting the Beatitudes there just a moment ago. One thing that I remember reading it years ago and realizing that when you have a definition of persecution, that Jesus defines persecution is even as somebody who picks on you. Even somebody who says nice, not very nice things to you, he still classifies that as persecution.
Yeah.
And then also Matthew 10, talk about back to rewards. He says, a cup of water in my name will gain its reward.
Yeah.
That's how small it is to be laying up treasures in heaven. And look what follows from the kind of things you're describing. You know, we've hit this theme several times, but it does show you how the web of Christianity, how the whole thing just fits together so well.
Yeah, and you start being concerned about the needs of others. You know, the thing is, Gary, it was hard for me. I mean, academically, I could relate to people who suffered, but not having suffered myself, it's very, very hard to really feel the pain that someone else is going through.
Sure.
But this has really sharpened my sense of wanting to help those. You talked about the cup of cold water. but help those who are in need, to cry with those who are crying, to be aware of the hurts of the world. So it's sharpened that. So there's so many benefits to it that you can say in the end, you know, if I had to go through this all over again, I'd go through it all over again, because the value of suffering is fantastic.
Your testimony is so incredible. You know what? It's almost like you wake up in the morning. I'm talking about you now. It's almost like you wake up and say, huh, I wonder what new thing I'm going to learn today.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder what height I'm going to get to today that I wasn't at yesterday because of this. It's just, it's like newly discovering the world.
Yeah, it is. And you think, so I'm, you and I are the same age, almost same age, 20 days apart. But, you know, so I'm 67 years old, and it's not as though I'm grasping at another 10 or 20 years of life because I just have to live longer. No. I mean, for me, I feel like my well is deeper right now, and I'm sure the same thing is true with you, than it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago. So I have a lot more to offer. I feel like, yeah, I want to continue on with the opportunities God's given me all over the world, and I'm excited about that. But if the Lord decides that He wants to take me home, that's great, because He doesn't really need me. So it's just a great liberating place to be.
I just rejoice in your testimony. I think it's just wonderful. I think I'm sure you've been doing it ever since you've been diagnosed, but I think for you to get that word out there is just, it would be liberating for other people to hear that, because think about how many people in the world, my family, your kids maybe, how many people in the world live in the ultimate fear of the C word?
Yeah.
You know, and hear somebody saying, hey, it might be the best thing that ever happened to you.
Yep.
But you know what? We bring this full circle, too. It's only the case if Christianity's true. Everything you're saying,
right,
everything
exactly.
You're learning, everything you're looking for, and if the Lord leaves me, takes me to heaven and leaves me there, fine, I wouldn't want to come back. All that's only the case. Think about people who just say that without data, and they just go, yeah, I'll get there with my own path up my own mountain. But they never stop to think about if that path is true.
Yeah.
You've done the work all through your life to know that this path is true. And that makes the gaining and the learning all the better, because it's built on a foundation that stands the test. I guess in a way, in a different way, but that's what Paul's getting at in 1 Corinthians 3. When he's only talking about good works there, but the point is the works are based on a true foundation. And that's what we have. It's only because the historical facts are true that all these lessons follow.
Yeah.
The lessons just don't follow on a... I mean, isn't that the parable, the house built on the sand and the house built on the rock? If it's built on the sand, you might have these nice thoughts, but when the wind comes, the house crashes. But if it's built on the rock, you can rejoice every morning with cancer.
Absolutely.
It's day and night. It's you know, again, we're back to Paul. You can face death and not grieve as the world.
Yeah, and God's sufficient. Christ is sufficient in all circumstances. Not just the good times, but He is sufficient in all circumstances. I mean, there are times that I've carried on my ministry with the exact same zeal that I did before I was diagnosed with cancer. And sometimes when you have your hemoglobin count is low, your white blood cell count is low, you feel anemic, and yet I have found that God has given me everything that I need to do whatever He's called me to do in every circumstance of life. And that's really cool as well. So you end up not depending on the arm of flesh. You end up seeing, wow, the arm of God is a lot longer and stronger than the arm of flesh.
We'll pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Gary Habermas in just a few moments. When it comes to sexuality, identity, and morality, feelings and preferences have replaced facts and truth. And post-truth confusion plagues not only the broader culture, but the body of Christ as well. With precision and deep insight, Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World by Abdu Murray will equip you to stand for truth in the midst of chaos. To receive your copy of Saving Truth as our appreciation for your financial partnership, call 888-7000-CRI. and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you. Increasingly, Western culture embraces confusion as a virtue and decries certainty as a sin. Those who are confused about sexuality and identity are viewed as heroes. Those who are confused about morality are progressive pioneers. Conversely, those who express certainty about any of these issues are seen as bigoted and intolerant. In Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World, Abdu Murray responds to the confusion by offering gospel clarity that can touch the hearts and minds of those in our post-truth culture. To receive your copy of Saving Truth as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. When you need answers about the Bible and the intersection of our faith and culture, you turn to the Bible Answer Man broadcast and the Christian Research Institute. But did you know we're entirely supported by God's provision through friends like you? In appreciation for your gift of ministry support today, we'll send you Hank's book, The Third Day, a convincing case study on the most important truth of Christianity, the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Johnny Erickson Tada has said, Hank leaves no stone unturned, thoroughly portraying the resurrection as our grand hope, the glorious springboard from which we all dive into eternity. Strengthen your defense of the resurrection and increase your confidence in your own eternal future. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org now. If you were going into combat, what would be more important? The number of those who were for you or the number of those who were with you? Now, apply that question to today's battle for the hearts and minds of literally millions of people at home and abroad. That's what makes members of CRI's support team so vital. They're not simply for CRI's critical mission, they're standing with CRI each and every day. If you want your voice and your values to be heard 24/7 through the outreaches of the Christian Research Institute, become a member of CRI's support team today. Just call 888-7000-CRI to stand with CRI daily in the battle for life and truth. And as our thanks, Hank Hanegraaff will personalize to you a copy of his black leather-bound, silver-embossed Complete Bible Answer Book, Collector's Edition, revised and updated. Call 888-7000-CRI or visit our website at equip.org. Let's now rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Professor Gary Habermas.
You know, I'm writing a book right now. It's my last book in a contract with HarperCollins. And the idea of this book is sort of what I was alluding to earlier. Truth matters, life matters more. This is about discovering the authentic Christian life. So it's a book that that really, I mean, it's autobiographical, and this story, I'm sure, will be in the book in some sense. You know, it's kind of hard, though, Gary. I don't know about you, but it's kind of hard for me sometimes to kind of bare my soul, you know, and to, I mean, you've kind of goaded me into this, I suppose. But I mean, okay. It's sort of hard for me to do this. I mean, I've been transparent about what I've been going yep. through. I've been transparent on social media and all of these kinds of things, but it's really hard for me to talk about myself in this sense, but it's also liberating. I've loved the last, you know, 15, 20 minutes of our conversation, honestly.
Well, you know what? I found out when my wife was dying of cancer, my very closest friends, let's just say a half dozen people, would call me, let's say every other day, and they'd say, how are you doing? And I resented being asked that. Because as I was simply doing what they ask, i.e. telling them how things were going, I was reliving it. And it was very painful to me to sit here and say, well, we had this test yesterday. She had this bad 2 hours last night. For me to sit there and say things like that and to realize I was losing her was very, very painful. But then thinking back on it later, I realized that telling them the story maybe five times a day for people who called was making me stronger. And I realized that the second, third, and fourth time I told yesterday's story to them, I could tell it and be strong. So they were actually helping me. And one of my grad students who went on to a European school and did a PhD after Liberty, but he did his master's degree here in apologetics, and he was my TA. He was one of my TAs. He asked me on the phone during one of these how's Debbie doing today questions. He said, Gary, let me ask you a question. Where would you be right now if it weren't for the resurrection of Jesus? And I love one-liners that stop me in my tracks. I love one-liners. Colossians 3:2, set your mind on things above, not on earthly things. I love one-liners like that. And he said, where would you be right now if it weren't for the resurrection of Jesus? And I realized life would be hell without the resurrection to watch my wife die. But with the resurrection, it liberates the whole. It baptizes the whole. And his question was so helpful to me. It made me stop right in my tracks and go, well, she's dying, but we do have the resurrection. It just, the things you learn sometimes are just, they're earth-shaking.
Yep. I have never learned one half so much as I did in the cauldron of adversity. And, you know, I remember Corrie ten Boom. She was one of my heroes of the faith. You know, we're both Dutch. And I remember her when she was talking about watching what happened to Bessie, her sister. And I think maybe it was Bessie that said this. I can't remember. But I remember Corrie ten Boom actually saying this, there is no pit so deep that he is not deeper still, with their Dutch brogue. There is no pit so deep that he is not deeper still. And that's what you discover when you suffer the ravages of life.
That's wonderful.
You know what? I have absolutely enjoyed talking to you today. I mean, I've always enjoyed talking to you over the years, and, you know, obviously admire you, the books that you've written, you know, the impact you've made on the lives of so many people for so many years. You're a true giant of the faith, and I'm grateful for this opportunity to...
No, but I've been listening to you like I've been your student sitting in class today while you're giving this testimony about who could say, there's another one-liner, I will quote you everywhere. Who could say I've got stage 4 cancer and it's been the best year of my life? Who can say that?
Well, the Lord is good. The Lord is good.
Yes, he is. And by the way, that's what I said to people when they called me every day. I knew the world. I told my PhD students this. I said, you know what I realized? I wasn't excited about watching what the next day was going to bring because it may have been my wife's last. But I said, I realized people were watching me, and I realized people almost, they weren't saying this, it would be too mean, but that they were thinking to themselves, okay, hotshot, who studies the resurrection, what are you going to do now? You know, people get a little bit bitter at the Lord, and they want to know, what's Habermas going to do? And so I would, when they asked me, how's your day been? What happened yesterday? How's Debbie doing? I would start the conversation, not trying to be overly spiritual, but to make a mark in their life. I would say, the Lord is good, but yet the worst possible thing has come upon me. Mm. But the Lord is still good. Another thing I said with my closest friends, Hank, I said, especially coming from a guy, I said, the Lord is good. This is after she passed away. I said, the Lord is good, but I still go upstairs to an empty bed at night.
Hmm.
Now, I'm sure a lot of people thought, oh, he's talking about sex again. There's a guy for you. He's always talking about sex. You know, the crazy thing was, when I was saying that sentence, sex was the furthest, not just like number two or number three. It was the furthest thing from my mind. What I meant was, the worst possible thing is, God is good, but the worst possible things come upon me, and yet I still go upstairs to an... What I meant was, I've lost my dearest person with whom I have fellowship.
Hmm.
That's what I meant.
You know what's interesting in this conversation? I was thinking as you were sort of prodding me, and you see, you're actually saying this was the best year of your life. And actually, yeah, when you were saying that, I was thinking in the back of my mind, I wonder if I'm using hyperbole here, because I've had a lot of wonderful, wonderful years in my life. I mean, I have been, as I said, blessed in so many different ways. So I've had a wonderful mother and a wonderful father. I got a great wife. I got great children. I've really been blessed. I had an opportunity to do exactly what God created me to do. So can I really say that this was the best year of my life? And you know, the more you've prodded me, the more resolute I am saying in saying, yeah, it was the best year of my life. It's been the best year of my life.
Well, praise the Lord. You know what? I was afraid. I was sitting here going, I'm saying to myself, really? I was really doing this. No, Hank, don't take it back. Don't take it back. This sentence is too good like it is. Don't take it back. And now you're going, no, I'm sure it's true. I'm thinking, yes.
Well, you've taught me a lot about resurrection over the years, I will tell you that. I mean, so many of us that teach apologetics are indebted to you, and your legacy, I mean, you're modest, but your legacy is an astounding legacy, and only from the perspective of eternity will you fully know how God has used you. So,
you know, Lee Strobel wrote that in a book to me when he interviewed me for Case for Christ. That's what he wrote at the beginning. I hope you guys are right, but I don't have, what I mean is, I only, the part I hope is right is that I will see in eternity people who said, well, you don't know me, but I can't, you know, you have that too. But I don't have time to think about that now. Hank, I'm in the middle of writing a magnum opus. I am writing a projected 5,000 page multi-volume work on the resurrection.
Oh, golly.
I have 1,300 pages written, and I have another 2,000 pages ready to be edited. So right now I'm at about 3,300 once I edit those pages. But the only problem is I have so much more to go. I've already told two of my grad students, one who finished his PhD and the one who's majoring in the resurrection right now, and he's going through his dissertation, I told them, guys, if something happens to me, and if in a year, Hank, I'm talking like you're talking, I said, guys, take these pages over, add your names to mine, and make sure this thing comes out. Because I'm not interested. One publisher said, well, can we give you a contract? We'd like to give you a contract for reference books, but we can't guarantee you're going to sell a lot of them, because these are the things that will go on all the Christian colleges and major churches in the country. And I said to them, I don't care if it sells hundreds of copies. I'm not interested. I'm only interested that these five volumes get out there to answer anybody's question who may have questions about particular naturalistic theories or whatever. Because if the resurrection is true, Christianity is true. It follows naturally. So I want this out there so that the questions are answered and so people are blessed, not so, you know, wow, I can't wait for the next one. I want to buy a copy. One guy wrote to me and he said, hey, let me know when your book's coming out so that I can get a second mortgage on my house. So I don't know. I love the topic, but I should have started it earlier. But people bugged me for years, and I thought, I don't want to tie up 10 years of my life. Daryl Bach said to me, and I just did an interview with him this week. I said, Daryl, I'm writing this thing because of you. Because one time we were in the John Ankerberg show together, Daryl and me. And he said, after the program was over, John said, how's your magnum opus coming in? Daryl said, he'll never write it. He'll never do it. And I said, what makes you say that? He said, because it took me half my life to write my two-volume commentary on Luke. And he said, you won't do it. And I walked away, and I've written him emails. I told him on the air the other day, Daryl, it's because of you that I figured I'm not going to take that for an answer. I'm going to do it. You're not going to make me not do this because you said that. Dared me, and I'm taking it.
That is too cool. Well, you know, you are Mr. Resurrection. There's no question about it. I said that at the beginning.
It's the greatest topic in the world. But like I said, I didn't get there because I wanted to help everybody in the world. I got there because I had what I thought were horrible questions.
Yeah.
So, well, Hank, you've been a blessing today. I hope you taped all this.
It's all taped. And people are going to be, you know, your enthusiasm, your passion, that alone, trust me, is going to impact a lot of people. And so I got to wrap this up because I got people in the engineering thing looking at me like, we got to start this broadcast.
Are you coming or not? This is the most exhilarating single interview I've ever done. And like I told you, I've done almost 700 of them.
Well, that's going to be a long podcast. And you know what? I mean, what's interesting about this is people love this. I mean, what they do is they'll go on trips. I have so many people telling me that these podcasts are like lifelines to them. And so having the opportunity, I promise people all the time, I'm going to bring you the most interesting, informative, inspirational people on the planet.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Professor Gary Habermas in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Our mission at the Christian Research Institute is to equip Christians to think and live Christianly. In appreciation for your gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, Hank Hanegraaff would like to send you a copy of Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World by Abdu Murray. Just call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271, or simply visit online at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you. Increasingly, Western culture embraces confusion as a virtue and decries certainty as a sin. Those who are confused about sexuality and identity are viewed as heroes. Those who are confused about morality are progressive pioneers. Conversely, those who express certainty about any of these issues are seen as bigoted and intolerant. In Saving Truth, Finding Meaning and Clarity in a Post-Truth World, Abdu Murray responds to the confusion by offering gospel clarity that can touch the hearts and minds of those in our post-truth culture. To receive your copy of Saving Truth as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org.